Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Well, we talked about the rally cat. Cat ran across the field. They finally got the cat off the field, and this happened.
Bang, and a home run. Get up, baby. Get up. Get up. Oh, a grand slam home run for Yadier Molina. He touches them all, and the Redbirds are back on top.
Mike Shannon with the call on the Cardinals Radio Network last night.
For the next hour, we have one guest and one guest only. Ladies and gentlemen, I think it's the first time we've ever actually done this, and that is to have Spider Caldwell on the show. Brad,
what?
Welcome.
I'm not sure if I've ever heard you refer to me as Brad, but
I kind of like it. Brad.
Well, you know, that's all right. I like it. But you know, when Joe, you know, if Joe would call me Brad, I was well, nervous because there was something I was in trouble for. But you know, but Steve, I'm not sure though. I was a little nervous coming in here because, you know, I'm not sure if I'm worthy of this chair, because I mean, usually sitting to you, you know, to your right is, I mean, the hammer. I mean, an icon. I mean, how can I live up to that?
Oh, believe me, I understand how you feel. I feel like Bones McKay next to Phil Mickelson. Nine iron, Mr. Ham. We're 150 out. I'd hit a nine.
Well, thanks for having me, Steve. That's great to be here. It really is. I appreciate it. And we get back a long way, and great memories, and just...
We were also in the hallway explaining things we couldn't talk about.
I was going to say, yeah, let's see. We might have to censor this pretty heavy here. Yeah, a lot of practices we've been together discussing a lot of things on that sideline.
Yes.
So, that we might not be able to discuss now.
Okay. Now, well, I want to get... James Franklin mentioned this the other day, and this is something you and I both know very well of, and that is the colored jerseys in practice. Hmm. The color-coded jerseys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm trying to remember now. Light blue is first team offense.
Right.
Green is second team offense.
That's correct.
Okay. Dark blue was first team defense. Mm-hmm. Red was second team defense.
Correct.
And then at the end, he was using white for scout team. But before that, there was also... Eight different colors.
Right. And the tradition was actually brought here by Rip. When he came... He did this at Brown. And when Rip came from Brown... You know, they had Brown's jersey colors obviously incorporated into it, and I guess, you know, Rip wanted to do the same thing here at Penn State, so he obviously had wanted to incorporate the Penn State colors. And so, and I asked Joe this one time at a bowl game, we were at the hospitality room, and I said, you know, Coach, you know, how did the, a lot of times I'd find some great information at hospitality room bowl games from Joe, and a lot of historical facts, but he would say, you know, I said, so give me the history of the color, you know, how do these different color jerseys? Because it was basically what it was, you know, first string, second string, third string, fourth string. Instead of saying that or saying ones versus twos, it was always
you
colored.
Had to get a jersey, and it was a big deal to a player.
Huge deal.
When you hung a different color jersey in the locker, and it was a step up, obviously.
Well, it could be down too, though.
I know, but I'm saying, but it was a big deal to a player. When that,
oh yeah,
step
oh
up.
big time, and you know, so when, so I asked Joe, you know, so he wanted to incorporate, so blue being Penn State's colors. They went with, and they wanted that to be the first team, so they went with a light blue, dark blue. So light blue, which ended up being like a more of a, you know, a Carolina blue for offense. Defense was navy. Okay, so second, I said, well, Coach, how did you come up with these other colors?
Red and green. I mean,
well,
and
red.
Then there was,
he said,
there was a, like a bronze brown, and there was a
third string defense was maroon.
Maroon. Yep.
Fourth string defense was orange.
Orange.
Okay. Yep. Third string offense was gold.
Gold.
Fourth string was white. In offense.
Oh, okay.
Was white.
That's right.
Okay.
It was white. Yeah.
So it was white. So there was the eight colors. So
well,
I said, well, Coach, how did you come
really
up with these?
It's really weird. I forgot about white. All the other ones I remember. Oh, yeah, that's what I did.
So I said, how did you come up with these colors? You know? He said, well, you know, so we did the blues because of Penn State blue, and we did light blue, dark blue. Second string, he said, think about it. He said, Red for defense was stop. Green, offense, go. All right, okay, I got that. Okay, I figured that out. So how'd you get third string maroon and gold? He said, well, okay, so if you mix navy and red, okay, you come up with maroon. If you mix light blue and green, you come up with gold or yellow. I said, that's unbelievable. So he didn't even explain how the fourth colors came. I have no idea where the orange came from for fourth string defense, but we used to call the guys the great pumpkins.
You're right.
That's what we used to call the guys.
I mean, the white jerseys were easy. The orange were like, I don't know how they got to that one.
I'm not sure either, but anyway, so, but yeah, that was one of them things that, but it was neat. I mean, we've had 61 years of players, former players, and actually in the Letterman's Lounge, we've hung up the different colors because we knew, we got 61 years of Letterman that would know what that is and what it stands for. You know, and then when Coach O'Brien came in, he's like, well, what is that? You know, so he's like, I explained that to him. So, but he subtly used some of the colors. He used a little bit for, we still use the reds for, for some guys to stand out or a certain, or the quarterbacks still were in red, obviously.
Right.
He used a light, I think Coach Franklin even still, they still use like a light blue, the light blue for, to point out a certain player, the specific player they're looking at. You know, like for an opposing player, to stand out on the scout team, whatever. So, but
yeah, that's how that came about.
Yeah.
Also, you were part of the '86 thing,
correct?
You were very young.
I know.
At the time.
Yeah.
What was it like being around them every day, and what was the tension like as each week went?
And it really, you have to almost go back to the 85 Orange Bowl, Steve.
Yeah, yeah.
We were an unexpected and undefeated season that year in 85.
Right.
And, coming off in 84, we lost the last three games of the year. And we were actually invited in 84 to the Poland Weed Eater Independence Bowl.
Yeah, and we also got an invite to the Cherry Bowl.
Oh, that the same. Okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
okay.
We had an invite to the Cherry Bowl to George. But I think George
Joe
Pearl
was so funny. Upset with the team back then. We could dictate. No. He's like, "We're not going. You don't deserve to go." So we
84. I'm doing the post game show with him. He said we played like a bunch of babies.
Yeah,
like,
that's
And I'm sitting there like,
So we're coming off that season in '85, and we end up going 11-0.
Yep.
Unexpectedly, and played Oklahoma for the national title, and so I. So after that game, after that loss, and we weren't ready. We really weren't ready to play Oklahoma when they had Brian Bosworth and Keith Jackson and,
Tony Casillas.
Great players they had. And, so when we went to the next day, those fifth-year seniors on that team knocked on Joe's hotel room door and said, "Coach, we just want you to know we're coming back next year for our fifth year because we're not going to let this happen again." So since on January 2nd on, that team was on a mission. Mm-hmm. And that's what it felt like when that spring, and here's another thing, that spring is the first time ever Joe actually went to the seniors and he told them, "You don't have to practice.
Right.
Work on your studies." He gave them spring practice off. Never have done that ever in my 31 years there, or 28 years with Joe. And because he trusted those guys so much, they would still take care of themselves and be ready. So basically they took spring off. And then that season, and then from day one, from preseason camp, that team was on a mission. So each game, the tension would build as we're still winning and we're getting closer. And if you look back in history, we had some barn burner games that year.
Yes,
some nerve wracking, we could have really, lost a couple too, but the team just, Joe always felt you could will a win. And I really feel like there were so many times he knew we had the chemistry, even when we don't have the great talent. I mean, you compare that with the Miami team we played in the championship, they were so much more talented than we were.
Joe would walk up and down the sideline saying, "Okay, who's going to make the play? Who's going to make the play?" He'd say that.
Mm-hmm.
You're there.
Yeah.
If you're walking him, that's
exactly
what he'd
right.
say. Who's, which one is he going to make a play?
And it just was, such a pleasure to be at. And then when we went be part of that, and then when we went to the Fiesta Bowl and started practicing, it's the only bowl. Fiesta Bowl is still my favorite bowl. I love the bowl, the atmosphere, and what they do for hosting you for that week. But I didn't enjoy that particular bowl because I didn't even remember any of the functions. I don't remember any of the dinners. It was just we were so nervous and so concentrating on that game. Here I am, the manager, and I'm nervous, and you know, because you just all you could think of was that game and the atmosphere, because it was the first time a game had ever been moved to January 2nd.
But he told the team on the 31st, okay, we're not practicing tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yeah, I do now.
So we're not practicing tomorrow. He says you're ready. We don't need to practice.
Mm-hmm. And I just never saw a bunch of guys were so focused and so committed to each other. It was a really special team to be part of. And I still think, isn't it one of the best, one of the most watched college football? You know,
it is games the. It's still the highest rated game ever.
One of the highest rated games ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was something to be part of. And then, you know, a funny note on that story, on that game at the end when Gifto made the interception, I'm on the sideline. In the eruption of jubilation, mm-hmm. my glasses flew off. Okay, in a celebration. Yeah. And I'm blind as a bat without my glasses. And I'm like, oh no, what do I do? And I'm just picturing getting trampled, you know, and I'm done. I wouldn't be able to see anything. And I'm like, what do I do? And so I get this little tap on my shoulder and I turn around and say, and it was my glasses. And somebody found them or saw them fly off. So I put them on. And here it was David Hartman from Good Morning America handing my glasses. I'm like, hey, that's pretty cool. You know, so thanks, Mr. Hartman. I really appreciate that. So, you know, then that locker room atmosphere after the game was just, people say, well, what's your greatest moment at Penn State? I mean, I try to separate my student years because I was a student. I was still a senior manager. I was a student manager. I was a senior that year, head manager. Right. And I kind of separate it. But overall, for the 31 seasons, that was still one of the most special, if not the most special moment in my history, my life.
When Tim Shope decided to retire and you were elevated.
Correct.
What did that mean to you? That they felt you could do it.
Well, I grew up only an hour west of here in Clearfield County, and we come to games as a kid. My brother lived in town; he was a chiropractor in town, and I drove by Beaver Stadium. You know, I would drive by as a kid, you know, visiting my brother all my life, and just to know that, like, I've been handed the keys to that stadium structure. It was just it was complete honor. Very humbling, and scary at first. You know, thinking too, like, oh my word, can I do this? You know, but just I was excited. I felt ready. I felt, you know, I've been, you know, Tim Shope was so gracious to let me really do a lot of hands on stuff, even when I was a student, and I felt ready to do it. And I was excited for it, but it is a lot of responsibility. You're the first there. In the morning, and you're the last to leave at night to lock up, and you know all the logistics of taking care of everybody, and not just players but coaches and staff, but it was an honor to be, you know, and a dream of mine to be handed the responsibility.
Thursday night meant polishing the helmets and the shoes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Who polished Joe's shoes?
Well, we had a neat tradition that started even before my time, that we had a saying, we called it, you do the shoes till you lose. So we would pass on the responsibility of painting Joe's shoes and cleaning Joe's shoes each week to the manager, to a new student manager, and you did it till you lost, till the game was lost. And when the game was lost, it passed to a new guy. He would do it till he lost, okay? And then so forth. So, and it was just one of those traditions. And just to back up a little bit on how, you know, the painting of the shoes, and people saying, oh, what do you mean? What is that? I asked Joe that one time. Well, I asked Joe a different question and he answered it this way, but he said, basically, when Joe was a kid, he used to go to the Yankees games. Yeah. Okay. And his uncle would take him. I think it was his uncle. And, you know, in fact, that's where his uncle would talk about, you know, when you, he said, and Joe told me this story once, he said,
I think he saw the Cardinals play the Yankees in the World Series.
That's right, it was. And then he said, his uncle told me, he said, now Joey, you watch when St. Louis comes out of the dugout, look at their uniform, look at their shoes in particular, and then you watch when the Yankees come out of the dugout, okay? And the Cardinals come out, you know, they had, their shoes were, they were white shoes with reds, but they had, you know, grass stain from the night before, they were a little bit muddy, dirty, you know, and stuff like that. When the Yankees come out, black, polished to perfection. So, and that's when he came up with the saying, you know, and told him, take care of the little things. The big things take care of themselves. So, and that's when he said to me, Coach Paterno said, "That's why you do the shoes." And he pointed to my, you know, pointed to my face. Mm-hmm. That's why you do the shoes. So, we not only did Joe's shoes, we did all the players' shoes every Thursday night, and we checked cleats. We, you know, check shoestrings, replace shoestrings as needed. You know, clean shoes, polish them, paint them, whatever. So, so Joe's shoes, we would do this. You know, we would pass on to manager to manager. And a neat story there, and just as another example. We had a manager by the name of Tim Reedy, who did the shoes in 1985, and he did them the whole way through and went 11-0. So we're playing for, you know, so we're going to Oklahoma, you know, play Oklahoma for the national title. So we're like, oh, we got to give Joe a new pair of shoes. You know, it's a national championship game. So we give Joe a new pair of shoes. Well, what did we do? We lost. So we told Reedy, he said, "Reedy, you know, you technically didn't lose because you didn't touch those shoes." So we shelved those shoes, brought the shoes out from 85, wore them all the next year. He, and Reedy painted them again, went 12-0.
Reedy's 23-0.
So we retired those shoes, actually. After that season, we had, because, and Joe had wore those for practice for another like 5 years. So he ripped the sole one day. He was dipping straight in a back pedal to a safety, and he ripped them and fell on his rear end on practice. And then I went over to him and I saw, you know, and I could see the flap, the sole flapping around in practice. And like, "Oh, coach, I'll have to go down, run down and get you a new pair of shoes." He's like, "I'm old buddies." They called him his old buddies. So,
yeah.
So we had to give him a new pair of shoes. So I had those shoes for years because I knew exactly what shoes. I'd been eyeing them up. And I had them in my office for years and years. And then when I you know, had decided to make a change and leave there for a short stint, I ended up giving them to his grandson, Joey.
Yeah.
You know, Jay's son. So Jay, hopefully, and he still has them. So
that's neat.
Yeah.
Let's see. Well, you gave me his bag. Was it the Capital One Bowl?
Capital One Bowl, yeah.
Capital with LSU. I went in, and he says, Spider looks at me and says, "Do you have a Capital One Bowl bag?" I said, "No." He says,
"Yes."
He says, he starts pulling shoes out and all this other stuff. He says, "Take this bag."
Yeah, Joey ain't going to use this.
I said, "Well, whose bag is that?" He goes, "That's Joe's bag. We'll just give him another bag." I'm like, "What?"
Yeah.
he already had Joe's stuff in there.
And
he
Joe,
pulled them all out. He says, "Take the bag." In fact, he says, "He'd want you to have it." I'm like, "Really?"
When it came to away games, Joe was the simplest coach to take care of.
Yeah.
You know, I remember we went and played in FedEx Field.
Yeah.
We played Indiana at FedEx Field.
Yep.
When you go to a pro stadium, you have a clubhouse manager that hosts you when you get there. And I'd never been to FedEx Field. So the clubhouse manager showed me around everything, and he takes me and shows me, "Here's the coach's room. Here's the head coach's room." I said, "Oh, okay." And he goes, he said, "What's, in the head coach's room, they had this nice round table with a tablecloth on it, a flower arrangement on it." And I'm like, "What's that for?" He said, "Well, we just, Monday Night Football, the Eagles just played the Redskins on Monday Night Football here, and, you know, and this is now on a Friday." And he said, "That was, the equipment manager for the Eagles put that there. That's what Andy Reid would have in his thing, and he would put Andy Reid's snacks and his toiletries on this table with the flowers." And I said, "Listen, get that thing out of here. Paterno sees that, I am dead if he has flowers on a table in the coach's room." I said, "You come back here in an hour and a half, and I'll show you our iconic coach's locker." Okay, so he comes back, and basically all Joe has in his locker, his name tag is written with a magic marker, Paterno. Okay.
Right.
Okay, and underneath, on a 5x7 index card, basically, that's blue. He had his raincoat and his windbreaker. We had it hanging in there because it was a chance of rain that day.
Right.
And then his iconic, you know, black shoes painted up with his. We used to take his white socks and we'd roll them and put them in the actual shoe rolled up. That's it. As soon as the clubhouse manager, he saw that, he's taking pictures. He's like, "That's unbelievable. That's awesome." Usually, all these coaches come in here, they're just like they think they're, you know, big time, and they want the lines with coats and all the options and all their snacks and food. And he said, "I love it."
Didn't the bus break down on the way over to that game?
Oh, one of them did. Yes.
Yeah, one of them did.
I think.
And then remember,
two,
and that was Urschel's first starting.
We had a shuttle guys with the extra bus. Yeah, that's right.
Wow, what, 93 Northwestern?
Huh.
The planes going out there. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Where they were using multiple planes.
Yeah.
And one of them had trouble and couldn't get in. I think the offense got there, but they couldn't get the defense there.
Yeah.
In 93. I remember that, and he was standing in the lobby about that one. Then there was, we have to tell the story about when he wins 323. We were just talking about it in the hallway.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, we were in Northwestern. We were leaving after the game. Thank goodness we won.
Yeah.
And
this is one where Seneca plays his best game. at quarterback.
Yeah, that's right, yes. Right?
But gets hurt.
And it was a rainy game. It was rainy.
And Zach Mills comes in and replaces him late because he got hurt, and he throws a touchdown pass to Eric McCoo.
Okay.
And they win the game. So now he and Bear Bryant are tied. So it's like, yeah, great. Yeah. Now we go to leave.
So we go to leave. So we get to the airport, and we go to Midway. And we're on the plane, and we're getting there, and we're all starving, we're waiting for our meals and everything. And as soon as we get up in the air,
the food's on the plane.
Food's on the plane. Yeah, we're getting ready. So we're the plane's kind of backing up, and we're starting to the nose of the thing is swinging around, and you can look out the window, you can see the guy with his little flares, because it's dust, almost dark, and he's directing us. All of a sudden, the plane goes, and we're lopsided. We're like, here, the guy with the sticks was basically he directed us off the tarmac or the taxiway, and we sank in the mud because it was soft and raining. So the pilot's like trying to gun it, and we couldn't get out. We're stuck, and we kept sinking further and further. So he's like, "Well, we're gonna have to deplane here and see if we can get this with no weight." So we had a deplane.
Well, actually, he told us we didn't have to originally. And I remember I said to you, he's nuts.
Yeah.
I said, there's 2 tons of beef in the back of this.
And he's trying to gun it, and to get it out. So we deplaned, and then they were going to tow it out.
Yeah.
And they couldn't do it. It wouldn't get out. So we were stuck there. And there was no other planes available. So we actually had to take a scramble to find hotel rooms. And we had 3 different hotels we were in that were all close to each other at the airport. And then everybody's starving now, So it's like 11 o'clock at night, and we're trying to, and they're like, the coaches are like, we got to find these guys food. So there's this Burger King down the road. So we're like, hey, we need like 200 Whoppers, and this is 11 o'clock at night. That's the last thing Burger King workers wanted to hear. So we,
I think the kids said to them, there's a White Castle open.
So literally at midnight, we're passing hamburgers out in a hotel room. Oh, it was crazy. So, yeah. But one of those that's one thing someday I got to write a book with on I might have to call it Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I know the title's been used, but there's been so many stories of away trips and the things you get into that's just incredible. One time we were at Michigan State, as an example. I get this phone call. So a lot of times I would like to set up in the morning of the game. If the game was at 3:30 or at 8 o'clock at night, I would set up in the morning of the game. Now, a lot of the equipment managers thought I was nuts, but I said, you still have to go over early to beat the traffic, and I hate going over the night before. It's just nice to relax when you get to the hotel with the team. Mm-hmm. We can go over and concentrate, and we can stay there early. We can go nice and early, get set up, walk around the stadium a little bit, just before all the hoopla. So we would try to go mostly the day of the game, which is, like I said, a little risque, but we did it anyway. Well, if it's a noon game, especially out there at Michigan State, late, you're talking 11 a.m. their time. So we went out the night before. So after dinner and after we settled in, because when we get to the hotel with the team at 5 o'clock on a Friday, we have things to set up at the hotel, too. We have meeting rooms to set up, training room, and whatnot. So we, and then after we eat, we leave. Well, so we had left, and we're loading. So we loaded a few things up, video stuff, and this is Friday night, so we're on the interstate, and I get a phone call on the bus, and a tractor trailer is behind us. I get this phone call and it's Doc Sebastianelli, Wayne Sebastianelli. Hey, Spider.
Said,
there's a projection screen laying out here in a bag laying out here in the middle of the parking lot. I'm like, what? So I'm like, are you serious? They said, yeah. So I'm like, oh no. So one of my student managers was the last one to put stuff in, and I said, I said, Matt, you closed the door in the back of the truck, didn't you? Yeah. I think so. Oh, no, don't tell me you didn't close the door. Sure enough, he didn't. And the stuff was flying out the back of the truck on the interstate. And I'm like, oh, no. So I said, all right, and as soon as we get there, we got to get the bags out, make sure I got every old player's bags. If we don't, we got to go on a search and destroy mission, because I just got to make sure the play. And luckily, we put all the uniforms on a rack on wheels. Okay, they have to keep them so they don't get wrinkled. Luckily, and a lot of times I don't fasten it to the truck. For some reason, God was with me on that. I basically bungee disc to the side of the truck
and save the uniforms. All right, more with Spider final half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We continue with Spider Caldwell here in the Sunbury Motors studio. And Spider talked about a lot of teams. What about the 94 team? What made them to you special in the personality of that team?
Well, I always tell people that it still had to be one of the greatest offenses in college football. I mean, when you're on the sideline, it was like not are we going to score? Can we score? It was when, how fast, and how and what way? You know, it was in fact, Kirk Deal, who was a student manager at the time, but he worked with the running backs. He knew all the plays as a manager. He would always come over during the the game. He'd go, watch this one, and it was just like, and he's like, tight end, running back. You know, it was just, and you'd watch it. It was just like touchdown. It was just really amazing to watch. And I have in my office, I have some wristbands, quarterback wristbands from certain games that I have over the years. And you know, I have one of McGloin's from Coach O'Brien's offense.
Yep.
I've got Michael Robinson's from the Orange Bowl game in 2005. I've got a Zach Mills one. I've got Tony Sacco, actually one from Tony Sacco in 89. But my one I always love to show people is carries. I have carries from the Rose Bowl, okay? And literally, like Matt McGloin's wristband, play wristband has 159 plays on it.
Right.
Okay?
Not carries.
Coach Mike Robinson's has 140 plays on his wristband.
Right.
Carey's wristband has 10 plays on it. 10. And it's like typewriter written, basically, or word processor.
Right.
And it's just, and I showed Wally Richardson, who's the director of our Letterman's Club, whose office is beside mine in the stadium. He looked at it, he goes, yep, oh yeah, that's mostly our goal line plays. I said, we had plays that were coming in and out with the tight end or the wide out, or we were allowed to call some of our plays, and we just, those were mainly goal line plays. And but it just goes to show you, like, you know, you didn't have to be complicated, because after the game, we had players, and we're shaking hands with opponents, they'd say, you know, you sons of guns, we knew exactly what you were going to run, we couldn't stop you. And it's just, I mean, it was 11 guys doing exactly what they were supposed to do on every single play to perfection. And it was just, it was really just a joy to watch those guys. From the first Minnesota game, you know, that game that year.
Yep.
And we just made a statement. And, you know,
Lee Kajana went 80 yards for a touchdown in that game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, a couple of highlights from that year that I'll never forget was, well, obviously the Illinois game. I guess they blame the Indiana game too for, not playing as well or whatever. And then we ended up, you know, not getting the kudos at the end of the season for a national championship team, which is baloney. But anyway, I remember at Illinois, one of my great memories from the equipment manager standpoint was, you know, when they punted the ball with about 4 minutes left in the game, we were losing. And Illinois was AstroTurf at the time, and before they had the field turfs. And when they kicked the ball to us, and we got the ball on about, you know, we received the ball, and it was a 96-yard drive. It was a 4-yard line, okay? Well, it started raining.
Yes.
Okay? It hadn't rained all game. Now, on the sideline, we had these racks of shoes, okay, because a turf game was actually more of a pain in the neck than a grass game. Grass game, you had your screwing cleats and you have your molded cleats like soccer shoes. At a turf game, we had flat bottom shoes like sneakers. We had a waffle bottom shoe, which was like little square nubbies. And then we had what we called, it was called a destroyer shoe. And it had like these little points that were about a quarter inch long that would dig into the AstroTurf. So you never knew the conditions of the turf, what kind of turf you had when you're going in AstroTurf, you know, how bad it was. So anyway, so when it started raining, we got the ball on a 4-yard line, 96 yards to go. We wanted to change to the rain shoes, which was our destroyers. So we literally, so the coaches are screaming on the sideline, you know, let's get the shoes on again. Well, we already started the drive, okay? So guys were coming off in twos, and we were like taking shoestrings and cutting their shoestrings and slipping their other shoes on tying them up, and out they go. So two at a time, guys were getting replaced, in and out. If you watch that drive, you'll see it. Yeah. Okay? Like, I think the last guy that got his shoes on was Kyle Brady, and he got him on about the 50-yard line. And it was an intense sideline, very intention-filled. But, you know, and then we end up driving right down the field, and, a minute left or so, Brian Millen plunged it in there. So, you know, so it was a great moment. It was, even we were just involved, and I hoped it, helping to, keep the guys upright with, we weren't slipping around. So, just a classic drive. Another thing that year, too, was, when I comes to mind, when we went to, we went to Rose Bowl, now we're 12-0, and yeah. I'll never forget, we have, at night before the game, the Friday night before the game or whatever night it was, the night before the game, we have what we call snack, and it's usually around 9 o'clock at night before they go to bed.
Snack is a meal.
It is. We aren't talking snack like, you and I have a,
we're not talking about everybody has
orange or a,
we're not, everybody little, has a Twinkie.
Or a small bowl of ice cream, a little snack. We're talking, hoagies and chips and I mean, this is a smorgasbord.
This was a Sunday night, I think, because...
is that when it was?
Yeah, because we had to play January 2nd, so...
That's right.
That's always a Monday, so it was Sunday night.
And people don't really... We came to that, and what I was getting at is we came to that... We were watching the Nebraska-Miami game, which was 1-3.
Right.
And Nebraska won, and Brent Musburger, I think, is declaring them national champions. Already before our game even was the next day, so our guys it was doom and gloom. It was just complete doom and gloom at the snack, and Joe's trying to get their spirit. Hey, listen, guys, there's nothing we can do about it. We got to go out there and just be ourselves, show the country that we are a number one team, and just go make a statement right away. Which we obviously did with Jonna Carter bursting out the first game play of the game, but so that was tough. It was tough to know that the guys because we were forced into that one verse. We had to play number highest ranked big Pac-12 or Pac-10 team at the time was
Oregon.
They were 12th in the country. So, but yeah, we just did what we could do and
snack,
snack. But yeah, right. Snack. And a lot of times too, people don't realize, a lot of that you hear about the locker room speeches and stuff like that. Some of the most classic speeches are really the night before. The snack speeches are really special. We've had some classic ones there, and because the day of the game, everything's just so boom, 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 boom. You're so onto such a time restraints, and everything just is so timed and everything that you just don't have very much time to give a great lecture. So you'll just do the last couple of last minute hurrahs and that. But
right. But
those snack speeches are the big time speeches.
Well, I'll tell you about one it was Notre Dame USC. And you and I both know that the two locker rooms are at the Coliseum are right next to each other.
Yeah.
Right? They're right next to each other. So Faust was the coach at Notre Dame. And he's going on and on and on about Notre Dame tradition, Heisman Trophy winners, national championships, Rockne, Lay, Parsegian, tradition.
Four horsemen,
the whole thing, right? And he's done. Notre Dame goes charging. And USC sitting in there listening to it. John Robinson gets up. He says, "Well, here's one tradition he didn't tell you about. They never beat us here. Let's go kill them." That was his whole speech.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's great.
Here's another tradition he didn't mention. They never beat us here. Let's go kill them. Well, this went fast.
We done? I'm sad.
I you're the first guest that's ever said that. Most of them,
I'm just getting started.
Most of them are like, I'm getting closer to leaving now. I think we're going to have him back.
Anytime, my friend. Anytime. Being with you,
my good friend.
It's always an honor.
My good friend.
Thank you, sir.
He's like a brother to me. He's very special. So, and now, with a great job. Up there, working with Bobby White and those guys.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I work in Beaver Stadium and in charge of special events and maintenance and upkeep of the south end zone and the suite area and the club area. Working with Bobby White and really enjoying it. I miss the day to day contact with the players and I miss the working in the equipment room and really love the passion for that. But You know, it's a nice change after 31 years of doing dirty laundry and, and hours from hell. It was a, it's been a nice change, and I'm still connected and can go over anytime. And I appreciate Coach Franklin still involving me with stuff like taking the names off the jerseys, stuff like, you know, this throwback uniform and stuff. And I really appreciate him still, you know, even leaning out to me and having a little bit of a say. And it's been a real honor in that regard.
Spider, thank you. We're going to have him back. We say we have you back for the Indiana game, the throwback game. Yeah. We'll do it. Good. Spider Caldwell. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Getting Spider Caldwell to come in here to the Sunbury Motors Studio to join us for the past hour. And I feel like we just scratched the surface. That's why he looked over me. He says, "We're done?" I said, "Yeah, we're done." Hey, we could take it till 7 o'clock, but I'm going to go to football practice, and then I'm going to go broadcast a baseball game, so I don't think we could take it to 7 o'clock. I think that's out. But we'll get Spider back. And I think we talked as he was leaving the studio. And I said, you know, I'm serious about the Indiana thing. He says, yeah, that's perfect because that's the throwback jersey game, which he had a lot of input into. So we'll get him on, September 29th? On that Friday, we'll get him on.
My birthday.
Ah, your birthday. Wonderful.
Yeah, there you go. Spider Collins Day. My birthday.
And that's very close to his birthday.
There you go.
His birthday. In fact, the 28th is Spider's birthday. So Libras. You guys are separated by a day.
Libras, man.
Separated by a day. And I think based on what the station told me, the suit also took that day off, too. That's a Friday night.
He takes all days, huh? Is that what it is now?
Yeah, well, it's like, I just don't think he's aware that he has a game of these days. After
possibly.
Sitting out last year.
Yeah, I mean, it is hard if you think you have a day off and then all of a sudden the next, you know, you find out all of a sudden you don't. Like, you got used to it.
The doggone games are getting in his way. Meanwhile, you got a hungry guy like Catrillo who's there, like, I mean, who would do a game every day of the week and it's not, you know, it's just, some guys are like that, you know. They're real go-getters and they're hungry and then there's the complacent.
I'm not a game caller. I'd be a show host. I can't. So he doesn't have to worry about me. But
I mean, again, he's
poor guy.
He's become complacent. You know, I remember the days the job meant a lot to him, and now it's it's become sad.
I don't know him well enough. I can't. You've given me a little bit of an education this week, so
he's become complacent. I'm telling you. Yeah, it's like Dick Hort, his color analyst, hungrier than ever, wants to be out there, you know. Ferlazzo did the job last year, hungry. Catrillo, hungry. Meanwhile, Captain Complacency sitting back in his office right now shooting hoops. So, you know.
Wow.
It's not funny.
So, yeah, I know. It's not,
it's not funny.
So are you tuning in for the Eagles tonight?
I've got a baseball game tonight. So I might see maybe a little bit of the fourth quarter. Matt McGloin's going to play a lot tonight.
Yep.
And so that's part of it. Matt McGloin is going to play a lot tonight. So that's the lure. The question is whether Matt can hang with this team or not. It has nothing to do with ability or anything like that. But last year they carried two quarterbacks, and then they carried a nondescript third. Now, if they want to carry three, where obviously you're the 46th guy and you're the one that's sitting out, and the only way they can activate the third quarterback during the game is if one of the other guys gets hurt. Okay. Then maybe you want to do that. So we'll see what they want to do. I don't know, but McGloin's going to play a lot tonight, so it's going to be his show. For one thing, Nick Foles isn't even available.
Yeah, no, he's not healthy yet.
No, so Nick Foles is not available. Baseball this afternoon, the Pirates beat the Tigers 7-5. The Reds beat the Padres 10-3. And at the PGA Golf Tournament, Tommy Olsen leads at 4-under par. Gary Woodland's at 3-under. Brooks Koepka 3-under. Tony Finau's 2-under. Let's see. Patrick Reed's 2-under. Jimmy Herman is 2-under. Paul Casey. Ricky Fowler's 2-under. Rory McIlroy's 2-under. Let's see. Anybody else of note here going through? Matsuyama's 1-under. Tommy Fleetwood's 1-under. Oosthuizen's 1-under. Dustin Johnson is 1-under. So is Jason Day. Graham DeLette's 1-under. So
nobody's jumped out yet.
Well, no, it's going to be hard to, and it's going to rain a lot there. The fact that it's raining a lot there is not going to be help. Kuchar's even. Justin Rose is even. Adam Scott's even. Let's see. Pat Perez is 1-over. Stricker's 1-over. Molinari is 2-over. Westwood's 2-over. Henrik Stenson's 3-over. Sergio is 4-over.
Spieth's going for his career Grand Slam this weekend, correct?
Yeah, if he can get there.
So
Mickelson's 5-over. Bubba is 6-over.
Yikes. Not a good start.
No. I mean, this again, it depends on the conditions you get when you get them. If it starts raining and you're trying to play out of the rough, it becomes really tough. I didn't see Spieth in here. The heck? John Daly's 3-over.
John Daly. As long as John Daly stays clothed and sober, we're good to go.
Yeah. Those two key parts. Let's see. Zach Johnson's even. Where the heck is Spieth? Sean McKeel, former champion's even. Ding, ding, ding. Yeah, Spieth's 1-over. Okay, shot 72. Course is about as long as Aaron Hills. You're saying, well, no, it's 7,500 yards. Yeah, but Aaron Hills was a par 72. Quail Hollow's a par 71.
Right.
So you take a 200 yards off a par 4 because it's a par 3. There's your 200 or 77. The same length. Oh, the big hitters. Big hitters. Wow. It's amazing between their fitness, their skill, and equipment and the golf ball. Believe me, the golf ball makes a big difference, too. I've heard Jack Nicklaus say once, I've heard him say it 20 times now, if they changed the golf ball back, it would make a difference in the game. But that thing flies now. And you know what? There are 154 players in the tournament. You know what all of them have in common? Not one of them has a club called the Chutter in the bag. Suit. Suit. It's a different game with him.